Despite the area cuisine not being particularly known for wheat, Indonesia is the world's second biggest consumer of instant noodles. In 2023, they ate 14.5 billion servings, according to the World Instant Noodles Association. 99% of its 285 million people have eaten it at one time or the other. There is another name on this list that kind of sticks out, Nigeria. What? Turns out, and this came as a surprise to me too, but the Indonesian noodle brand Indomie is super popular there, and is likely the single most popular packaged food in all of Africa. So popular, it occasionally shows up in rap lyrics. How did this happen? In this video, we look at how a noodle brand from Indonesia became a sensation in Nigeria and the rest of Africa. I briefly touched upon Indomie's origins in an earlier video on Indonesia's Salam Group. And I must admit something, when I made that video, I had never eaten or even heard of Indomie. It was just a vaguely familiar Indonesian noodle I might have seen somewhere. Turns out, it's quite popular. And this video, by the way, is not sponsored by Indomie. They seem to prefer the K-pop band NewJeans than Asianometry. Anyway, as mentioned on that video, Indomie's dominant position today dates to Indonesia's authoritarian second president, Suharto. Suharto frequently partnered with Chinese entrepreneurs to industrialize his economy and finance his activities. These entrepreneurs often themselves became quite wealthy. The most famous of them was Liam So Leong, or Sudono Salam, and his Salam Group business group. At its peak, the group was an Indonesian chaebol with assets worth over $20 billion. But that is a different story. Back to noodles. In 1967, Suharto asked the U.S. government to provide some food aid in the form of rice. The U.S. and Australia did not have much rice at the time, so they sent wheat instead. Raw wheat had to be milled before it could be used, but Indonesia did not have any milling facilities, so the wheat had to be milled in Singapore. This was not ideal. Salam, knowing nothing about wheat, went to the legendary Malaysian Chinese tycoon Robert Kwok for advice sometime in late 1969. Kwok, whose own business empire included flour mills in Malaysia, told Salam that they should just build the mills right in Indonesia. Salam already owned a piece of swampy land along Jakarta Bay for this, and the two partnered in 1969 to found Bogasari Flour Mills. Bogasari quickly became the dominant flour miller in Indonesia, having received a concession to provide flour to the Java and Sumatra regions. And for his part, Suharto, in a 1995 interview, claimed that it was he who told Salam to build the flour mills. According to him, Salam was nothing more than the guy who carried out the order. Robert Kwok received a 25% share in Bogasari, but lost that a few years later when Sudono Salim merged the Bogasari entity into his Indo Cement Company. Kwok was not happy about that, and he thought he got flushed out. Instant noodles were first popularized by the Taiwanese-Japanese entrepreneur Momofuku Ando. In the wake of World War II, Ando pioneered the flash frying method for pre-cooking instant noodles. He started selling chicken flavor instant noodle packs and founded a company called Nissin. And today Nissin is the second largest noodle giant by revenue. In 1972, an Indonesian entrepreneur from North Sumatra named Jajadi Jaja founded a company called Indomie. The name was in the same style as like the aforementioned Indo Cement Company. Mi means noodles, so Indomie just means Indonesian noodles. Indomie was not Indonesia's first instant noodle brand. The Supermi brand launched 2 years earlier with technical help from the Japanese. But Supermi used imported flour to make their noodles. Indomie, on the other hand, bought their flour at cheaper prices locally from Bogasari. For a while after building this massive flour milling business, Salam did not do much with it. Salam Group simply sold the flour to noodle and bread makers. And that was fine because the Indonesians were not particularly partial to wheat. They like rice, which is fair, because rice is awesome. But during a rice shortage in the late 1970s, the Indonesian government asked Bogasari to provide and promote an alternative food for its military and civil officials such that rice can be spared for the public. So Bogasari bought a lot of expensive instant noodle machinery to supply the government and ran marketing campaigns extolling the virtues of flour-based products like bread and noodles. Rice sucked. Eat bread. But the rice shortage situation reversed in the 1980s thanks to new strains, good weather, and fertilizers, green revolution and all that. Indonesians' rice self-sufficiency was an incredible economic achievement, but a business problem for Bogasari Flour. Bogasari bought capacity for 2 billion packs of instant noodles each year, with the intention of selling it to the government. But now the government did not want to buy, and Bogasari had to do something about this excess capacity. So they started an instant noodle brand called Sarami, directly competing with their customer Indomie. Salim's son, Anthony, later claimed that they first asked Jajadi if he wanted to buy those lines, but were refused since the lines were so different. Whatever the situation, Sarami noodles quickly won 40% of the market thanks to low production costs from an integrated milling business as well as a $10 million marketing campaign. Salim went to Jajadi once more, and Jajadi realized the situation and in 1984 merged Sarami and Indomie together to create a JV called Indofood. A few years later, Indofood bought Supermi too, quickly consolidating the Indonesian instant noodle market. Initially, Salim owned just 42.5% of the JV. A few years later, they bought the rest of the shares from Jajadi. How? Anthony simply said that a few things happened on the other side and they quote-unquote picked up the pieces. Jajadi believed differently, feeling that he had been forced to sell after going into debt. After Suharto's fall, Jajadi sued Indofood for compensation, and after a seven-year saga, the Indonesian Supreme Court eventually decided against him. For years after its launch in the early 1970s, Indomie mostly sold in a soup format, kind of like Japanese ramen. Then in 1982, Indomie launched a soupless dry version called Mie Goreng, which simply means fried noodles. This dry version was an instant hit, apparently because it was easier to prepare than the soup version. By 1994, Indofood controlled about 80% of the Indonesian instant noodles market through its three brands, Indomie leading with 60% share, and then Supermi and Sarami. Instant noodles are very cheap, easy to cook, and taste great thanks to MSG. How healthy they are remains somewhat up for debate. Okay, maybe not really. But these are the things we cannot deny. The cheap price is pretty important. Urban dwellers frequently eat Indomie sayur, meaning Indomie with a tiny bit of green vegetables as a complete meal. To accommodate the country's staggering diversity, Indofood sells over 110 flavors, though Mie Goreng remains the most popular by far. And Indomie is also halal, which matters in the world's largest Muslim population. In the late 1980s, Indomie noodles started going abroad. It seems to have started out as a word-of-mouth thing, Indonesian foreign workers bringing it with them abroad, but over time Indofood caught on, striking partnerships with local companies. Indomie has arguably made the most progress in the Middle East and Africa, where I suspect their halal status helps. In Saudi Arabia, their current share of the instant noodle market is claimed to be over 95%. And there is an Indomie factory in Syria. Somewhat surprisingly, it has stayed open throughout that country's long-running civil war, providing cheap food for the locals. Several times, the factory almost closed due to high import costs, but the government repeatedly stepped in to get things back up and running. But it is in Africa's most populous country that Indomie has really made perhaps its most significant impact. And with that, I think it's now time to chat about Nigeria. I have not mentioned Nigeria much before on this channel, so maybe we can do a quick overview of their cuisine. But first, I should point out that Nigeria, like Indonesia, is a highly diverse country with over 500 ethno-linguistic groups. So what follows is a gross generalization. Nigeria is warm and tropical. Its agriculture is amenable to growing fruits, cotton, palm trees, pineapple, watermelon, mango, banana, cocoa, peanuts, and dates. So the local cuisine blends indigenous carbohydrates like yams and cassava with beans and local meats to make various delicious salads, snacks, soups, puddings, and heavy sauces. This cuisine has been influenced by the area's colonial history, first the Portuguese and then the British. These influences added New World vegetables, curry, potatoes, and chicken. For example, the addition of tomatoes and curry powder to a local rice dish called jollof rice. What there is not, however, is wheat, and with that, wheat-based noodles. And yet Nigerians today love instant noodles. In 2023, they consumed about 3 billion servings of it. So how did Indomie make their way into the country? In the early 1920s, Kanshan Vaswani, the youngest son of a well-regarded physician named Seth Tolaram, traveled from British India to Indonesia. The family hailed from the northern British Indian province of Sindh. It was traditional for Sindhi men to go overseas for trade, following the trade routes of the British Empire. So Vaswani worked with his brothers in Indonesia for a bit before returning. Then came the chaos of the partition of India. The Sindh province became a part of Pakistan. With large-scale violence breaking out, Vaswani and his family fled with only what they had in hand. His daughter simply remembers them locking the bungalow and leaving. They would never come back. They chartered a bus and traveled to Karachi, and then from there took a ship to Mumbai. They stayed at a refugee camp there in Mumbai for a few months. Then they went to what is now the city of Chennai before connecting to Singapore. There in Singapore, the local Sindh Merchants Association helped arrange passage to the city of Surabaya in Indonesia in March 1948. In the nearby city of Malang, Vaswani founded a textile shop called Toko Vaswani, selling and trading fabrics. In 1950, the company adopted the name of the family patriarch to become the Tolaram Corporation, expanding into chain retail, selling garments and home fabrics. They grew very well by sourcing product in bulk directly from the manufacturers, giving them a price advantage. Their stores put their cheapest textiles, the stuff used for school uniforms and such, in the back. Parents walking to go get that often saw other more expensive things on the way, like wool, and bought that. In the late 1960s, the company opened a small procurement center in Singapore. Then in 1975, they moved their headquarters there as it better suited their international trading operations. Gradually, the company diversified their product lineup, entering into pulp, chemicals, and paper products. They also had stakes in factories all over the world, from Estonia to Latvia to South Africa to the United States. In 1977, a Sindhi merchant friend suggested to Mohan Vaswani, son of founder Kanshan, to go to Africa. After spending time in Nigeria, Ivory Coast, and Ghana, Mohan decided to open shop in Nigeria because of their high population, relatively high per capita income, and a lack of consumer electronics. Thusly, Tolaram became one of the first Singaporean companies to do business in Nigeria, trading electronics, textiles, and fishing nets. It was a bit of a risky time in Nigeria's history to do business. The country was then under the rule of its military after a succession of coups. Then, in the early 1980s, the economy fell into a foreign exchange crisis due to high spending and a shortfall in oil revenues. But being a private company still run and controlled by its founding family, Tolaram can afford to invest for the long term. Their first textile factory in Nigeria lost money for almost 9 straight years. In 1988, having already been in Nigeria for over a decade, Tolaram began importing noodles from Indofood to Nigeria. The idea to do so came from Haresh Aswani, who first joined the company in the 1980s. Aswani and his brother Sajan had seen Indomie's massive success in Indonesia and thought that they could replicate that success in Nigeria too. Nigeria's population seemed similar to Indonesia's. The population was young. Average age was like 16. And it was not only growing very fast, 3% a year, but also becoming increasingly more urban, 23% in 1981 and 28% in 1988. But on the other hand, 50% of the Nigerian population did not have access to drinkable water, and 78% lived on less than $2 a day, though noodles were priced to be pretty cheap. So Tolaram started by positioning Indomie as a food for kids. At the time, the average Nigerian family had 5 children, so the thinking was that busy mothers entering the workforce can buy Indomie noodles as a cheap but stomach-filling food for their kids. Things got off to a rough start. Nigerians had no idea what to make of this new food. They initially thought that they were being sold worms, and since they are used to eating with their hands, they didn't know how to eat the noodles, let alone cook them. An advertising agency finally told them that they had to first educate people on the basics. So Tolaram hired people to go to the supermarkets and schools to demonstrate. Open the packet, add 2 cups of water, boil it, and remove the water, then add seasoning. They hired people to walk onto the streets during Nigeria's legendarily bad traffic jams and demonstrate Indomie. Nevertheless, for the first 6 years after market entry in 1988, sales volumes of Indomie noodle packs in Nigeria did not really set the world on fire. Nevertheless, management still believed in the product, and so they doubled down. They looked at ways to cut expenses. About 40% of Tolaram's cost of the product was in freight, and they were importing 40 to 50 containers a month. It made sense to skip all that and make product inside the country. In 1995, the company struck a deal with Indofood to create a joint venture called D-United Foods, receiving the right to manufacture, brand, and sell Indomie noodles in all of West Africa. With this, Tolaram built their first noodle factory in the country. But the joint venture still lost money for several years after that. It got to the point that Indofood apparently lost faith and tried to pull out, but Tolaram asked for another year. And then in June 2000, they launched a new flavor, onion chicken, along with a massive marketing promotion with giveaways and raffles. Onion chicken was a massive hit. Them and other flavors like pepper chicken and jollof catapulted Indomie to the most popular noodle brand in Nigeria, ahead of competitors like Chiki or O Noodles. It took 10 years for Indomie noodles to become profitable and 12 years to make more than $10 million in revenue. After that, though, sales started doubling each year. By 2004, they had a second plant and was producing 40 million noodle packs each month. By 2010, a billion packs a month. Today, there are over half a dozen plants around Africa producing noodles not only for people in Nigeria, but also in Ghana, Egypt, and Eswatini. And despite there being 17-plus new competitors in the market, Indomie remains dominant. Indomie's success, starting in 2000, launched the company onto a different path. The Asian financial crisis of 1997 and the rise of China convinced Tolaram that selling B2B commodity products had no future. They decided to scale down almost all their other existing businesses like electronics assembly and textiles so they can grow their consumer brands. This required a great deal of investment. In the late 2000s, suppliers started to fall short in delivering noodle raw ingredients, so Tolaram started vertically integrating, opening up their own packaging plant, seasoning plant, flour mills, and oil mills. And it goes deeper than that. Nigeria's infrastructure was then very poor. Just 18% of the roads were paved then, and 75% of their trains did not work. So Tolaram had to, quote-unquote, pull in basic things other companies take for granted, like electricity, water, and waste processing. Tolaram's long-term commitment to and experience operating in Nigeria, particularly their formidable distribution company, Multipro, makes them an ideal platform for other consumer brands. In 2015, they struck a joint venture agreement with Kellogg to bring Kellogg breakfast cereals and snacks to West Africa, as well as another joint venture agreement with Arla, a Danish-Swedish dairy cooperative, to bring dairy products to Nigeria. Milk and cereal. I can taste the synergies. In 2019, they partnered with Colgate Palmolive on a joint venture to bring dental health products to the Nigerian market. And in June 2024, they acquired a majority stake in the Guinness Nigeria Brewery from its former owner, Diageo. Guinness has been having hard times there since Saab Miller entered the Nigerian market and started competing heavily with them. Before we conclude, I want to thank viewer of the channel, Michael O in Nigeria, for recommending this topic. Never knew that I had any kind of viewership in Africa, and it always tickles me to hear from people of countries so far away. In addition to its consumer business, the Tolaram Group has been building one of West Africa's biggest infrastructure and real estate projects. In 2019, they raised about $1 billion from China Development Bank and China Harbor Engineering to build the Lekki Deep Sea Port on the outskirts of Lagos. The port can handle some of the largest container ships in the world, with TEUs of up to 18,000. The Tolaram Company received a 45-year concession from the Nigerian government and hopes to make the port as significant as the ones in Singapore or Dubai. Tolaram's intention is to make the port the core of a larger industrial ecosystem called the Lagos Free Zone. The Free Zone is a privately owned free trade zone where foreign companies can bring their imported goods to sell to the rest of Nigeria. A fascinating business trajectory and a story that has taken us from Indonesia to India to Indonesia and then to Nigeria. And at the heart of it all, some 20 cent per pack instant noodles. All right, everyone, that's it for tonight. Thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the Patreon, and I'll see you guys next time.